Good morning, good morning, good morning. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Testing, 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 testing. Audio appears to be picking up. That's good. Welcome to another edition of Thinking Out Loud with Jesse, a podcast where I share some of my thoughts with you on capitalism, the world around us, and how to navigate the ever-changing climate of being a productive human. Today, we're actually going to begin with a question. Why does buying more never feel like enough? In this episode, I explore how capitalism hijacks our instincts from shopping to side hustles and sells us back our own identity. Using everything from baby beavers to billion-dollar wellness brands, we unpack why you're unfulfilled, constantly searching, and spending more than you should. Most importantly, we look at how creativity, real, unmonetized, flow-driven creativity, might be the last sacred space left. This one's for anyone who's ever felt the urge to create, but got distracted by a cart full of gear. So actually today, we're gonna do something a little different, and I'm gonna start by playing a clip. Check it out. Here we have a baby beaver, and what it's doing is, it's been domesticated, but it's still building a dam. So you watch what it's doing here. It's grabbing different plushies. It's grabbing its blankets, and it's trying to create a dam inside its own house, inside a human's house. And I think that's really cute. It's really funny as well. And it's going to be the backdrop for the theme of our episode today. Because much like the beaver, humans are instinctively pursuing their own passions. And you can see what this beaver is trying to do here is trying to make a dam. There's no water. And, you know, we can laugh, we can sit there, but in its mind, it's doing what it was born to do, and there's nothing different about whether it's in a house, whether it's in an actual river. So, I think you get the point. It's moving its stuff around. It's got lots of little plushies here. It's got the SpongeBob plushie. So, humans are much like this. It's kind of funny to laugh. It's a domesticated beaver, but it still tries to build the dam. Why? Because of instinct. It doesn't matter that the dam is made of toys. It doesn't matter that it's made of wood. That baby beaver is just instinctual. There's nothing going on there that is necessarily wrong. I actually quite like what it's up to as well because it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. So if you look at humans, you know, we're stacking gadgets. We're flexing gear. We're hunting different discounts. It's the same instinct that we've always had. Different species, different dam. The problem is we realize some of it, but most of it we don't realize what we're doing. And capitalism does depend on us not knowing what the hell we're up to. So humans in malls and retail outlets are doing the exact same thing as that beaver. They're mimicking their biological nature, gathering, hunting. A lot of this is often rooted in competition, sexually, but also for resources, nesting, and identity projection. We are hardwired, instinctive beings, and capitalism knows this. Spending money is often a symptom of a lack of purpose. And so, you know, one thing to keep coming back to as we talk about this is capitalism thrives by selling us relief from the void it helps create. But creativity, when done correctly, can be that antidote. And so, in order to unpack a little bit about what capitalism does to us and that hard wiring, I feel like it's important to go back a little bit in time to talk about a few things that really played out in the right way to make capitalism so insidious. A couple of things that stand out is capitalism did rewire the human from childhood. And this goes all the way back to Rockefeller's general education plan, where he built obedient factory workers instead of independent thinkers, and that is epitomized by that line. He says that he wanted a nation of workers, not thinkers. And so before the 1900s, we can point at some fragmented educational systems. We could look at the Frankfurt system, but we can always come to the conclusion that it was more holistic before 1905, talking about music, play, debate, philosophy, and certainly craft were big aspects of education. If you look at the post-1900s, you see bell schedules, you know, timers, rings, factory-level movement from class to class. You have memorization being pushed, hierarchical structures being absolutely present in every facet of a school system, and standardization. Creativity became extra and not essential. The result? Adults who feel guilty for unproductive time and who only value output. You were programmed to serve the machine and not yourself. So you're sitting there thinking, well, if I'm not doing anything, I'm being lazy. This comes directly out of the post-Victorian era, 1905 changing of the school system. And so that's the first real capture of capitalism on childhood. And it does, again, form that backdrop for the hijacking of our educational system and our values so that we can be more productive. When we look at instincts as well, going back to the beaver, it's building that plushy jam out of instinct. It's just misapplied instinct, right? So humans, the same thing. We want to gather, hunt, nest, and compete. This comes out as shopping, hunting sales and discounts, hunting home goods or resources for the home, and competing by flexing online. Capitalism doesn't invent any of this craving. It just exploits it. It keeps us filling that void with stuff, trends, consumption, optimization. And one aspect of this that really hits home for me is I was not the best student when I was in middle school and earlier. But I do remember back to school shopping as like my favorite time of the year. Not even first day of class, not even seeing my friends again, although I did really look forward to that. I really did like going to Staples or like some sort of Office Depot to get the thousands of items that I would probably not even be excited about in a month's time. But that was definitely what I can call back to and say, you know what, I really looked forward to that time, and less so being in school. I didn't really care for math class. I didn't really care for a lot of the subjects that they're hammering home in grade four. The only ones that really seemed to interest me were history class, and that happened a lot later in my life, probably about grade nine, I started doing that. So again, back to school shopping being that perfect segue for me. It wasn't easy to go into school and be excited about it. It was stupidly easy to get excited about the pens, the binders, the sheets of paper, and the fresh smell of it all, alongside my parents taking me to that store, of course. And so when we look at it, you know, we know that capitalism does capture everything. It expands, it wraps its arms around every facet of life. And each year, a new aspect of humanity seemingly gets conquered. Maybe not each year, maybe each decade. Recently, we see wellness becoming a cottage industry in terms of capitalism. We also see grief, dating, sleep, spirituality as platforms and products now. Now, once wellness was an escape, it was just something that you did to feel better. Now it's $400 in yoga mats and mushroom powder. And then we see how this is hijacked quite a bit. And it's a normal thing, and it's happened every decade, like I said, in capitalism. This is nothing new. We just need to take a step back and take stock of how it's impacting us today. Another great example is how reading used to be a big escape for a lot of people. Just diving into books, public libraries being the main access point for that. Fast forward to today, the biggest company in the world in terms of retail is Amazon, and they started as a bookstore. Reading used to be that escape from spending. You go into a public library, you dive in, you hang out there for a couple hours. Now, you go to Indigo, you buy your pillows, your skincare, your candles, not just books. You might be buying blankets, but they have completely capitalized that entire aesthetic. And so when you walk in that store, you're not thinking about reading necessarily. You're thinking about how you're spending your time, what kind of person you want to be. And of course, Indigo has wrapped that up and sold it back to you. So if reading, the most soul-driven act, isn't safe from the market, I don't know that anything would be. And so when we look at some of these occurrences, I felt it was privy to pull up some statistics to kind of bring my point to the surface. And when we look at consumerism, some stuff that really stood out to me, the average American sees at least 4,000 ads a day. Now, that is based on TV numbers. So if you don't have cable, you might be doing something different. However, anybody who has a phone in their hands knows just how often they're seeing ads, and it is actually incredibly insidious. We also see in the United States about 17.5 in consumer debt in the trillion, 17.5 trillion. 64% of people buying something to feel better. We have fast fashion brands. We have 52 little seasons per year. If you follow the retail calendar in the United States, you know that just about every month there's a reason to spend money, to go to the store, to reinvent how your house looks, whether it's Christmas, Valentine's Day, Easter, Halloween. Following all of this is a lot. Now, if you look at something written by the Los Angeles Times a little while ago, they said that the average home has 300,000 items in it, which is crazy. I don't know if that's actually true, but that was a staggering statistic that I couldn't leave out. And finally, on the consumer trend side, about 70% of people in North America are living paycheck to paycheck. And you know that is something worth paying attention to when we look at some of these consumer trends. On the other side of the coin, when we look at creativity, we do see some stats on this now that we do have some creators in the world and we can study them. About 77% of creators cite burnout at some point in their journey as part of this. 1 in 3 Gen Z feel guilty doing non-monetized activities. 50% of creators earn less than $1,000 a year, and this is talking about a $250 billion space. This also looks at commodifying wellness. So we look at those numbers. There are 5.6 trillion in the global wellness market, which is an incredible thing to think about, that you know, even 15 years ago, wellness wasn't even thought of as a center point or something that you could get a lot of money out of, right? Now you've got $1 billion valuation from Calm, which is crazy, or a Headspace, which is another wellness app. You look at 80% of yoga studio revenue, it's merch. Spiritual influencers are earning millions of dollars. Wellness is a $15 billion view count on TikTok right now. And so when we put all that together, we can see some trends and we can spot that wellness is being commodified. People are spending money like no other, and happiness isn't generally improving, right? So when we put this together, we can see how capitalism has subverted our instincts, hijacked our hobbies, and hijacked our creativity, more importantly. It also works in this way where, you know, if you want to think about it, capitalism hijacks your joy and resells it to you, which is another, you know, way of saying the same thing. But I really like that part because you'll find so many new products are actually doing that thing. You know, I saw recently Uber had a new application where it asked its users to meet at a central point on an artery instead of at the location so that they could be picked up by other drivers and the driver can pick up more people along the same route. That is repackaging buses as an app, as a platform to the consumer. And that's a great example of that. You know, things that we're not thinking about for a little while get repackaged and resold to us. But when you look at, you know, capitalism, hobbies, and creativity, you can see that, you know, you find a hobby, you get good at it, somebody says, oh, you should monetize this, and then the joy kind of fades. Capitalism does turn this self-expression into self-extraction in that way. And so we got to kind of guard against this and be aware of it, because not everything needs to be monetized, captured, put online, added for views. Some things can just be for us. And that's kind of the point of the episode today. We're going to be looking at ways that you can escape capitalism, that you can feel good about what you're doing, and that you don't necessarily need to feel like you're in the rat race when you're pursuing a hobby or a passion, right? When metrics become validation, likes, follows, and views, and flow is replaced by feedback loops, it takes away the joy, the magic of being creative. Imagine starting something and feeling like you needed to make $1 million from that. You need 1 million people to like and validate what you're doing before you would even consider continuing this. It would completely take away any ability to enjoy that thing that you're doing, right? And so in that way, capitalism does sell you back yourself. You're not just buying products, you're buying identity. Gear equals legitimacy. Brand equals status. Products equals self-worth. Capitalism doesn't want to fulfill you. It just wants to keep you chasing. And social media does accelerate this with the constant comparison. You're not a customer, you are the product and the problem, right? So like I said before, there is one antidote, in my opinion, and it is creativity. You can also think of this as a hobby, if you would like. What I'm talking about is a space that is just for you, that has a minimum amount of spend, but is time intensive. That's what I would consider a creative space, right? Not all creativity is protected, so you gotta be careful. The goal is to have a creative passion with low financial friction. So not skiing, not race car driving, unless you have the budget for that and it's minimal to you. It does need to have a low bar of entry, in my opinion, too. Writing, reading, recording, sketching, even gaming can be part of this for the right price. True creative hobbies should be cheap or free, should be repeatable and sustainable, should require minimum setup or space, should be time intensive, not money intensive, and it should induce a flow state. So if you're wondering, it should be easy to do these kinds of things. For me, as you can see, I like to talk. So for me to put a camera in front of my face, to talk to you in the way that I'm doing, it's not an enormous stress on me. And if it was, I don't know if I'd be doing it. So that's what you need to think about when you're doing that. I have a few other creative habits. Gaming, one of them, writing and reading are others. Those are really great to sink some time into where you don't feel like you have to pay for something per hour. Anything you have to pay per hour or per experience is something I would stay away from. So for example, if you're already paying for internet per month, I would consider meeting your hobbies with free internet. What can you do there? Can you read articles online? Can you download stuff? Can you play around with like a free ChatGPT? Okay, so that would be a great place to start, right? Some red flags to watch out for when you're doing your creative, when you're looking for the right activity that matches what I've said. You gotta watch out for, you know, if you're more excited about buying the equipment than doing the activity. And I'm definitely that guy. I'm definitely that guy, you know, with my back to school stuff. But I remember when I was a kid, I was a soccer player too. It was much the same there. I did enjoy the pitch. I did enjoy playing, but God, did I enjoy buying cleats, buying gloves, buying socks, buying shin pads. That was my favorite part of the thing. And so, you know, it took a while, but there was definitely some misalignment there. So you got to be less excited about buying the equipment and more excited about doing the activity. Can you go forward with, you know, a minimum viable product? Do you need the $300 journal, or can you use a piece of paper for now? And when you get a little bit of momentum and you have a little bit of budget, then you can slowly add to your collection of toys, of things that improve your hobby, of equipment, right? Second thing, another red flag to watch out for is that you would need the perfect conditions. Oh, I can only sing when the sun is out and it's hot outside and the right conditions exist, you know. If you need the perfect silence, the perfect gear, the perfect space to start, I would maybe rethink that as a hobby as well. It's not something that you should sway away from if it's important to you, again, but just in terms of hobbies, in terms of creative spaces, it needs to be repeatable and it shouldn't require all of the pieces of your life lining up to do. It should be something you can do once or twice a week. Finally, another red flag to watch out for is being hyper-focused on outcome, audience, metrics, or how this is going to perform. Another real big part of creativity is it should be for you. If you feel comfortable sharing it after you've created it, that's another thing. But what I'm talking about is actually building something and thinking about the end, right? Are people gonna like this? Will they watch it? Are they going to enjoy it? That does take away from your ability to be present. And so that's what you're looking to do. These creative spaces, as an antidote to capitalism, work because they allow you to be present. You're not thinking about the future or the past. You're not thinking about buying anything. You're existing in a moment that in that moment, capitalism can't touch you. So my advice to you would be to protect one part of all your creative self from the market. Let some activities be sacred. Let some of them be inefficient. Let some of them be private. Only then can you decide whether or not you'd like to put it out there or try your hand at, you know, putting it on YouTube, putting it in a creative space, seeing what others think of it. But it shouldn't have to be that way. You should be able to dive into something and not feel the need to share it with the world. And that would be how you escape this constant rat race of the market and capitalism, right? When you start quantifying things, that's when you start getting away from being present. So that's, you know, as you can tell, a central theme of today. We want to be present in our hobbies. We want to dive into it in our creative space and watch time melt away. Have you ever come out of something that you've been in kind of like a zone or a flow or a creative space and you say, God, how did 3 hours just fly by like that, right? So, you know, another way of looking at it is creativity dies in spreadsheets. It dies when you think about likes, follows, clicks, gear, money. That's all an external validation cycle. What you really need to be thinking about is, you know, what gets measured gets managed, but what gets measured also gets distorted. And so when you're thinking again about any of those metrics, that's again going to take away from your ability to enjoy it. And when you really watch something, you know, think of any content you consume, any artistic aspects of life that you really like, any artists that you love to follow, they all follow these rules inherently, whether you like it or not. Some of the most impressive work that I've seen done, it has nothing to do with the artist thinking about if people are going to like it or not. They just have that confidence and have that space. And more importantly, they're present. And that's the key to it. If they're thinking about, you know, how do I follow up my masterpiece with another masterpiece, they will actually get bogged down in this creative trap. And, you know, that's where writer's block comes in, right? That's where, you know, someone like Michelangelo needed to feel a bit of pressure, but definitely wasn't thinking about if everyone would like it when he painted the Sistine Chapel. I think I'm oversimplifying that, but when we look at creative, it's important to be present. And I think that this theme will shine through for anybody who has been in creative, and for anybody looking at getting away from this 9-to-5 grind. I would argue that having a creative space is the antidote to that. And so for me, obviously I have a 9-to-5, I work very hard in it. Having another space that has nothing to do with that, that I'm not looking to generate income from, but is a space for me to express myself, how I feel, thinking about things out loud, like this podcast, it's healthy. And that's what I would recommend to anybody who's struggling. Finally, life costs money. Have you ever thought about how leaving your house, walking out of your door, costs money? Every time I leave my house, I think about that. Whether it's coffee, whether it's going out for a meal, whether it's taking my girlfriend somewhere, I'm always thinking about that. And so when you look at the other side of it, creativity doesn't have to cost money, but it can be an extreme value to you because you're not spending money and you're doing something that fulfills you and you're being present. And so that's, for me, another great thing. You know, living in a high cost of living city, everything is economized. Even if you want to take a day off, that costs money. When you dive into your passions, that is basically, for me, something I'm holding on to very dearly because it allows me to escape the rat race. And so that's my point for today. When we look back at the beaver, he builds that dam in his house because he's wired to, right? We do the same things when it comes to our hardwiring. We just don't know it yet. And so when you take a step back, and you give yourself a space to be present, to unwind, this will allow you to, like I said, escape the rat race and do a little bit more of what we were hardwired to, right? Creativity won't fix you, but it will help you reconnect to the part of yourself that capitalism doesn't have a hold on. And, you know, when we look at that beaver building the dam, on our side, that dam is creativity. And I would encourage anybody to pursue these passions in a way that allows them to escape the system. So that's what I would say on that topic. This has been yet another edition of Thinking Out Loud with Jesse. I really thank you for listening. And if you have any comments, if you have anything you'd like to add, please feel free to do so in the comments below. Thanks again.